You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards Ham of Surrey, Virginia. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Wides. And you are listening to this show on heritageradionetwork.com, where you can now listen to programming 24 hours a day. And if you miss any of our great shows, you can also podcast them on iTunes. So I do this show once a week. It's a weekly show from 6:30 to 7 on Tuesday nights. And doing a weekly radio show is not easy, I have to say. I don't just sit down here and start talking. I don't just make it all up. I actually spend a couple of hours thinking about what I want to do the show on and then writing it out, because I want to make sure that I get everything down before I start. So I like to sit down and write out the whole show a day or two in advance so I can really think about it. And I want my shows to be more than just simple discussions of a food or an ingredient or a technique. I like to think about and make other people think about food and what they eat in a different way, to sort of connect it to their lives and their food lives in a larger sense, put it in context, you know, within the world around them. Think about how food connects us to our world. So because of that, sometimes it's a little bit hard for me to come up with interesting ideas for shows. It takes some time. And I live in eternal fear that one day I'm just going to run out of ideas. And I may have to start bringing in like an adorable, spunky, smart mouth 5-year-old here, you know, to save my ratings. Sort of the Cousin Oliver syndrome. But when that day comes, when and if that day ever comes, feel free to stop listening, but let me know that you're going to. But until that day comes, hopefully many years from now, I still have a head full of ideas and thoughts about food and cooking that I can share with you. So sometimes ideas for shows just kind of reveal themselves to me. Something just happens. And this past weekend, my show topic was revealed to me by my vegetable drawer in my fridge, which I opened, and it had a 3-week-old slightly moldy half head of green cabbage in there, just your basic head of green cabbage that I had forgotten about. And this was a cabbage that had been in the fridge basically since early February, since the weekend that I came back from my last trip to Asia. And I came back, I think, on a Friday, yeah, and then on that Saturday, in a very, very jet-lagged stupor, I went shopping, grocery shopping, and I bought it, and I think I cooked half of it that first night, and then I totally forgot about it. And I'm just as guilty as anyone of doing that, of buying produce and then leaving it to die in the fridge, which is something I rail against people doing, but I do it too. But luckily, cabbage has longevity genes of steel. It lasts forever. So anyway, the reason I was home opening up my vegetable crisper drawer on Saturday morning and finding this was because I was supposed to have gone to Ohio on Friday night to cook a benefit dinner at the Culinary Vegetable Institute for their Veggie U program. And I've mentioned them before here, Culinary Vegetable Institute. They have a educational arm called Veggie U, which is a program for kids to educate kids about earth-to-table cooking. And I had mentioned the dinner before on the show, and I had posted the menu on the Why We Cook Facebook page. And it was going to be great. I had this great menu. My friend and co-chef Beach Flamholz was coming. But unfortunately, it started to snow on Friday morning, and we got more than 12 inches of snow, and my flight was canceled. So I never made it out there. And Beej was flying from Baltimore, and all those flights were canceled too. So they had to cancel the event, and we never made it. And so hopefully it'll be rescheduled. And if so, I'll definitely repost it and let people know. But so anyway, that's why I was home this weekend, unexpectedly. And being the restless person that I am, even though it was the middle of one of the worst snowfalls in history, I needed to get out and take a walk. I'm kind of like a human pet dog in that I need to be taken out and walked at least once a day. Even if I've worked out, gone running, gone to the gym, I still need my walk every day. There's a Yiddish word for what I am, and it's called, I have shpilkis. Shpilkis is like you can't sit still for very long. You have ants in your pants. I have major shpilkis. My best friend Lisa actually turned shpilkis into an adjective, and she says that I'm shpilky. So I'm pretty shpilky. So anyway, I had to get out into this blizzard. So we went out for this very long walk and did a little grocery shopping and went home to make dinner. And we had decided that it was going to be just a big vegetable night. So I bought a celery root, which I talked about recently on my show, The Orphans of Winter, if you want to look that one up. I also found some beautiful, like, poppin' fresh, bright green, gorgeous okra, which is just starting to come into season, coming up from the south. So I bought that. I think I talked about okra on a show, too, once over the summer. And I got an acorn squash, which I love. And the plan was to just roast all that stuff up with some grapeseed oil and some salt and, you know, maybe a few spices, and then maybe eat some cheese on the side with that and just, you know, call it dinner. So we went home, I opened the vegetable drawer, and lo and behold, there was the little sad, wilty half head of old cabbage, along with a half of a similarly old daikon radish that I had also bought, and a half of a carrot, half of a peeled carrot, all of which date back to the jet-lagged shopping trip after I came back from Korea, when I decided that all I was ever going to eat again was Korean food and kimchi, which lasted about 3 days. Until I came here to do my show and ate my pizza that I get after doing my show. But I've worked in this business a long time, in the food industry, and I know that if you have a vegetable in your fridge and it's not completely slimy and covered with green mold, it's still usable and still edible. So I couldn't throw that stuff out. I had to use it. So I took that poor little cabbage and I trimmed off the mold and I cleaned it up, gave a little rinse, and I chopped it up into big chunks along with the carrot and the daikon, and I tossed them all together with a little sesame oil and some salt and a little splash of mirin and a little splash of soy sauce, and I threw them on a hot sheet pan in the oven and roasted them. And I basically did the same thing with the acorn squash and the celery root and the okra, but I kind of varied the oils and the salts and the spices that they all get them. I'm trying to eat more turmeric because I've been reading about how powerful of a cancer fighter it is. So I threw some turmeric on the squash too. It's supposed to be really, really good for you. Anyway, all of it got really nice and crispy and delicious in the oven. It all came out really great, especially that celery root. Boy, that was pretty great. But the real kind of breakout surprise sleeper hit of the night was that cabbage, that crispy caramelized 3 week old cabbage turned out great, really delicious. And it was like seriously good eating. It was sweet and juicy and great, even though it was so old. And cabbage has like this real way of sneaking up on you and surprising you. When you really least expect it. So I sort of had this aha moment and I said, that's it. My next show will be about the unexpected joys of just plain old green cabbage. So tonight's show is in honor and dedication of the humble green cabbage. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more than you've ever wanted to know about cabbage. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards Ham of Surrey, Virginia. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. If you enjoy listening to this show, I would love to hear from you. Or if you listen and you're not enjoying it, I can take it. Let me know. You can find me on Facebook at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. Or if you go to HeritageRadioNetwork.com and find the show there, you can also leave comments. And I've been getting some great comments from people, so thank you if you've been commenting. I would love to hear some more from you. So tonight's show is all about cabbage. I know some people immediately think, ugh, cabbage. Just give it a chance. Open up your hearts. Open up your minds. Times are tough. We need to re-embrace the simple things. So I was talking about this half of an old cabbage that I found in my fridge that was a little bit moldy. And during the break, actually, Jack, my producer, came in and said, really? It's okay to eat it with mold on it? And I said, yeah, just cut off the mold. It's like cheese. You just cut off the moldy part. You know, back when food was more scarce and people were more thrifty, you just cut off the mold. And it's fine. You live. It makes you tougher and it builds up your immune system anyway. So it's not like I never cook cabbage. I do cook it. I like it. And I had that half in my fridge because, like I said, when I came back from Korea, I decided that was all I was going to eat. I ate a lot of cabbage in Korea and in Vietnam, too. But because Korea is a cold weather country, they have a winter, they tend to eat a lot more cabbagey type stuff. That's sort of how it works because it's a cold weather vegetable. Now, obviously, in kimchi, the most classic, you know, kimchi, the most familiar being the cabbage kimchi. But also in a lot of other ways, it would be thrown into soups and wilted. It was very finely shredded in salads. It was fried up really crisp in pajang, which are Korean pancakes. And I also saw a couple street vendors making something called okonomiyaki, which is actually Japanese. It's a Japanese cabbage pancake. It's really freaking good, okonomiyaki. I don't know any place in New York except one that does it, and they only do takeout. But the real joy of okonomiyaki is that when you eat it in Japan, you get to make it yourself at your table. So it's chopped up cabbage just mixed with some eggs and some flour. And then it gets dumped out onto a hot griddle, like a teppanyaki, you know, like Benihana kind of griddle, over protein, really, really thinly sliced various proteins. And then you cook it until the cabbage starts to brown, and then it gets flipped over and cooked again and topped with shredded up nori, you know, seaweed, and bonito flakes, which are those brown, they look like wood shavings, but they're made from fish. Bonito flakes and that cool Japanese mayo, kewpie mayo, that comes in the bag that looks like an IV bag. And something called okono sauce, which is this sweet, fruity Japanese barbecue sauce. And so in Japan, as I was saying, if you go to an okonomiyaki place, you get all of those ingredients and you sit at a table that has a little built-in teppan on the top and you get to cook it yourself. And it's really fun. Why was I talking about okonomiyaki? Oh, yeah, because in Korea, I saw people selling it because cabbage is big in Northern Asia. And the half cabbage in my fridge was the remains of a craving for okonomiyaki, which I make sometimes at home in a cast iron skillet, and it comes out pretty good. I also like to saute it, shred it up and saute it in the morning till it gets really, really brown and crisp, and then top it with a couple of fried eggs, which is really, really good too. There's a lot you can do with it. It's incredibly versatile, cabbage, and it's really cheap. It's so cheap that it's almost criminal how cheap it is. There's a vegetable place not far from my house that sometimes will sell heads of green or white cabbage for like 29 cents a pound. Now, what food in the past 50 years have you been able to buy for 29 cents a pound? It's crazy. It's so cheap, it's almost free, which I find a little bit strange because people must be putting some sort of resources into growing it and transporting it. And anyway, I think we, as you know, in general, have a real kind of aversion to it. Most people, when you mention it, go, ugh, because I think cabbage to a lot of people represents poverty and poor people food. What their grandparents ate or great-grandparents ate before they could afford good food. But, you know, they were onto something, those old people. It really kind of harkens back to our immigrant roots, I think. I mean, certainly the fact that it's so cheap, you know, shows that it's a very, very humble, very simple food. It's also extremely nutritious. It's really high in vitamin C, which I don't think people necessarily realize, and lots of fiber. And it's because it's a cruciferous vegetable, it's got very, very powerful anti-cancer properties, like broccoli and kale and collards and all of those other cruciferous, the Brassica oleracea family. But I think that people, as you know, they immigrated, and then they assimilated, and then they sort of moved on up and out of cities, out of urban places. And I think the cabbage became associated with poor tenement slummy living, you know, and smelling boiled cabbage in, you know, sulfurous hallways of rundown buildings. And, you know, it was poor people food. It wasn't what middle class suburban people ate. It was what poor people ate. And so everybody kind of moved up and out and left it behind with their immigrant roots. Unless, of course, you're Asian. If you're Asian, if you're Chinese or Korean or Japanese, of course, you were smart and you never gave up on it because you know how good it is. And your, you know, mom probably cooked it, even if you grew up in the frozen broccoli world of the 70s and 80s. And they actually use it a lot in Mexico, too. Shredded raw, like on fish tacos, like in Baja. Oh, so good. But when I was a really little kid growing up on Long Island, we still had a lot of farms out in Suffolk County. They're all gone now, of course. But there was actually a cabbage farm right in the center of our town, like just beyond the little shopping center. And in the fall, they would let the unpicked heads rot in the field. And it would smell really bad, really, really sulfurous. And you could smell it for miles. But within a few years, that farm was gone. They weren't growing any more cabbage. And the land had been sold. And the only things that grew on that field were split levels and ranches. So I think as the demand for it went down and the price of land went up, houses were more popular than cabbage. But people in Europe still eat it a lot. They eat a lot in Italy and in France, and especially, of course, the Germans, because they make their sauerkraut. And they eat a lot in India, and I mentioned Asia. But, you know, when's the last time you cooked it or served it or someone ever served it to you? I mean, you wouldn't necessarily have a dinner party and invite people over and serve them cabbage because of those negative connotations. But I think you should reevaluate it. You know, maybe people eat it once a year boiled with corned beef, like for St. Patrick's Day. But what you really need to do is witness the transformation of it from this, you know, cold, crunchy, slightly sulfurous raw vegetable to the crispy, brown, nutty, caramelized, sweet state that it evolves into as it cooks. It's really, of course, raw is great too. You know, everybody loves a good slaw. I prefer my slaws with like a vinegar, lemon, salt kind of effect. I'm not big on the mayo kind of thing, but you know, either way is good. But it takes on such an utterly amazing transformation. It like metamorphoses when you cook it. And you know, that whole smell is just, the smell happens from boiling, and the smell happens from when you boil it for too long. If you boil it more than 5 to 7 minutes, you start to break down the sugars in it, and it starts to off gas, and that's where the sulfur comes from. But why would you boil it longer than 7 minutes? Why would you boil any vegetable longer than 7 minutes? Harold McGee, the great Harold McGee, who wrote the book on food science for chefs on food and cooking, he studied the development of unpleasant smells when you cook the brassicas, that whole family, you know, the kale, collards, etc. And he said that that's what happens with prolonged cooking. The smells develop. So, and only in water. If you cook it dry, you don't get any smells. And Shirley Currier, who's also an amazing food science person, said that the smell actually doubles as you cook beyond 5 to 7 minutes. Sort of exponentially gets worse. So, you know, for your best results, you want to slice it thin and saute it. Don't boil. I mean, really, why would you boil much of anything? You could blanch something, but don't boil. When I teach, I tell my students the only things we actually boil is water for pasta. I don't really boil much else. But I still think the best way to go is the waterless route and use some oil and sear it, crisp it, get it really brown and really crispy. 2 weeks ago, I did an episode of the show that was all about fermentation, and I talked about sauerkraut and kimchi and all the fermented things that you can make from cabbage. And what's truly amazing that it's in that situation, especially sauerkraut, it's just salt. It's just cabbage and salt, because the cabbage slowly ferments basically in its own juice from the yeasts that naturally occur on the leaves. And the yeasts start to feed on the sugars, and you get lactic acid and acetic acid from the fermentation process, which, you know, preserves it itself. So if you missed the sauerkraut show and you're now thinking that it's time to embrace cabbage, you should first start by listening to that one and then listen to this one, so you'll have the complete compendium on cabbage cooking. And on that one, I also talked a lot about how it has really high vitamin C and how important that was for people who lived in cold climates like Alsace and Eastern Europe and places like Korea, where they had no access to vitamin C in their food in the winter. They didn't have any citrus. And without vitamin C, you get scurvy. And so they would get their vitamin C from eating their fermented cabbage. So very convenient. We're going to take another short break, and when I come back, even more about cabbage. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and you can listen to this show live every Tuesday at 6:30, or you can podcast it on iTunes. You can also listen to HeritageRadioNetwork.com 24 hours a day now, and you can leave comments on the site for any of the shows that you listen to and feel compelled to comment on. So this episode of Why We Cook is the show that's all about cabbage. And I hope I haven't turned people off with that. It's singularly focused, this show, tonight. But sometimes I think singular things deserve a lot of attention. I could have included a lot more of the brassicas, but I actually think I did a show on them a while ago, and I really wanted to just focus on this humble little vegetable. I don't know, am I losing listeners because they can't believe that I can talk for 30 minutes about the unsexiest of vegetables? I don't know. Well, if so, then too bad, because it's my show. And I think cabbage deserves its celebratory moment in the sun, so to speak. So, of course, while we're talking about it, we should not neglect the other beautiful members of the cabbage family, like the Savoy, which is green but has kind of those crinkly leaves. That Savoy cabbage comes from France. Also very nice. Sautés up very well and has a softer texture than your basic green or white head of cabbage. I love the Savoy. The Napa, sometimes called Chinese cabbage. The Napa is the elongated one that's kind of green at the tips and white at the bottom. Also great. Sautéed, good raw. Not really used for fermentation so much. And, of course, red cabbage. You can't forget the red cabbage, because with red cabbage, you get not only the powerful sulforaphane cancer fighters, but you also get this huge dose of beta carotene in that. So that's like a double whammy vegetable. That's probably the best one you can eat. And what is better than really good, slowly braised red cabbage with like a sweet and sour kind of flavor profile? The key to making that work is to cook it really slowly with something sweet in there and something acidic. Usually you'd use like some red wine vinegar and some like red currant jelly is actually really traditional. Or you could chop up an apple, put some brown sugar. Sometimes I do it with a little bit of bacon in there. A little bacon's nice. Although, trust me, none of my cabbage cooking ancestors would have ever touched bacon, but they're all dead, so now I can use bacon in my cabbage, because I think it adds a lot of depth to it. But the key to making really great red cabbage is to cook it really, really slowly. First, cook it covered so that it steams and it softens up and gets really tender in its own juice. And then open the lid and cook it uncovered until all the water evaporates. Because when all the water cooks out, the sugars will begin to caramelize. And that's when the magic happens and those invisible sugars start to do their trick. You don't think of a vegetable like cabbage as being full of sugar, but actually it has quite a bit. It just takes time and gentle coaxing to get it to reveal its sweetness. And it'll get all soft and sweet and tangy and great. And it's one of those things that, like, I love to feed people who think they hate certain vegetables, stuff like braised red cabbage or roasted Brussels sprouts, because they're completely gobsmacked by how good they are and how good you can get those vegetables if you treat them well, treat them with respect, and cook them carefully. You know, there's all these poor souls out there who have only ever eaten really bad boiled vegetables. And it's up to people like us, like me and you, and all the other Heritage Radio listeners to guide them toward the light of vegetable salvation. That's as far as I go in my religious element of the show. But anyway, now to slightly change the subject a little bit to a slightly sillier, lighter little story. So I live here in Brooklyn, where the show is broadcast from. But I have a little summer place, a little teeny, 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 tiny bungalow in the woods north of New York. It's 400 square feet. That's how small it is. And for the past 8 years or so, we've been slowly renovating it, very slowly taking it from the hideousness of its most recent renovation, which was probably done in about 1972, to where we want it. And it's been taking a long time because it only happens on the weekends and only in the summer. And it gets really hot in that house in the summer because it's basically a plywood box and the roof has no insulation. So it gets really hot. So one summer, a couple years ago, we were working on the house, and there's a little farmer's market in the town. So I went into town and I bought a head of green cabbage to make a slaw, a nice cool cabbage slaw for dinner. We like to eat a lot of slaw in the summer in my house because I can make a big batch and leave it in the fridge, and it actually gets better with time as it marinates. And because cabbage slaws without mayo are very, very low in calories, it allows us to drink a lot more beer throughout the course of the weekend. So it's good. It balances out. So I had this cabbage in the fridge and I took it out. I was going to make the slaw. And while I was pulling off the outer leaves, my significant other was, you know, hard at work on some project. And I pulled off the outer leaves and I put them in the garbage. And as a, you know, sort of joke, he grabbed one and put it on top of his head. He's fairly hairless on the top of his head. And he created this little cabbage yarmulke to put on top of his bald spot to cool down his head. And it worked so well. The coolness of the leaf cooled his head down so well that we got this brilliant idea that we should put these big outer cabbage leaves in the freezer and freeze them. And so we did it. And then the next day, when it was again really, really hot in the house, we pulled the frozen cabbage leaves out and put them on our heads and walked around with the cabbage leaves on our head because they cool your head down really well. So we now have cabbage hats in our freezer at all time. And I, for one, I'm looking forward to another long, hot, sweaty summer of wearing cabbage hats on my head. So there you go, cabbage hats. So anyway, like I was saying before, if you are a fan of the show and you have anything you want to say, I would really like to hear from you, especially if you are a cabbage eater or a cabbage fan, or you grew up in a house with it. I would like to know your cabbage stories, believe it or not. I want to know if people ate it, if they were first generation, second generation, third generation immigrants, immigrants themselves. Where did cabbage fit into your food story when you were growing up? I'd like to know how many generations removed you were from the old country, any of that stuff. Also, if there's anything you would like to hear about in future shows, if you have any topics you would like to hear me discuss, let me know. I'm always open to new topics, like I said. Anything to delay the day when I have to bring in the sassy five-year-old to help lift the ratings is appreciated. There will be no Cousin Oliver moment on this show, ever, I promise you. That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Good night.